with a lot of people who escaped the fire complaining of no alarm sounding to warn them.
We begin with a look at what safety systems were in place there.
13 Undercover's Wayne Dolcefino is working that story. And Wayne, is this more a question of compliance?
I think it's a question of age, too, how old the building was. Melanie and Dave, getting answers from Houston City Hall today has not always been easy. Take these simple questions. When was the fire department called? How long did it take for the fire trucks and the ambulances to get there once they were called? You know what? The City Hall, your City Hall, refused to tell us today. But they are talking about whether multi-story buildings like the one that burned are as safe as they should be. It had been 2 years since a fire inspector had stepped foot in the East Loop office building. And while it passed the inspection, notice the section on compressed gas. The inspector writes, NA, not applicable. Yet look at the oxygen cylinder we all saw hanging from the building yesterday. Buildings built when this one was had virtually no requirements for fire safety. The building did have a partial sprinkler system and a partial alarm system, but the only smoke detector we know about was in the atrium lobby, and fire officials told us today it only was meant to trigger a roof vent to open, not signal an alarm. Today, city officials say a new building like this one would require pull stations, alarm bells, and flashing strobes. But it still wouldn't require smoke detectors in offices or even on every floor. That might have provided a much faster warning than the screams of a young couple driving past the building and seeing the flames.
She located the fire up in the left corner of the building, so we pulled in. And once we pulled in, we both ran into the building.
It was just an impulse. There's a fire, and we pulled up, and we ran into the building and started told people to get out.
If history tells us anything, it's that the city's big fires in the past have triggered reforms. Woodway Square blaze in the 70s enforced changes in the use of wood shingle roofs. Expect a debate now about smoke detectors in multi-story buildings that aren't big enough to be called high-rises.
We will be taking a look to see if there's changing in ordinances that we want to deal with the narrow category of buildings that were pre-1981 atrium tile structures, the style structures that are not covered by the high-rise ordinance. And I have reason to believe, thank goodness, there's not many buildings, but we certainly will be taking a look at those.
And maybe someone will soon tell us how long it took for the fire department to respond to the calls for help. We figured fire victims like Dawn Herring had a right to know.
What went through your mind when you saw the ladder actually show up at your window?
I was so relieved. So relieved, because it took them so long to come get us.
More than 24 hours after this fire started, the fire department still refusing to answer that basic question. Response time. It's a routine question we ask after almost every big fire. We don't know why it's so difficult to answer this time. Wayne Dolcefino, 13, undercover.
Back at the scene of the fire, there's still concern about the building itself. Hours of intense heat from the flames and the thousands of gallons of water poured onto the fire left that building a dangerous place to be, especially for firefighters who still have work to do there. Eyewitness News reporter Jeff Inning continues our coverage there live on the North Loop East. Jeff?
Well, Dave, federal investigators with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms are assisting local arson investigators to try to find a cause of this blaze, but right now they haven't been able to get into the building. Today, engineers hired by the company that owns the building determined that this structure is unsafe as it stands right now. Before officials can go in to determine just how this fire started, the building is going to have to be reinforced. Now, a contractor is expected to come out here either tonight or tomorrow to start securing the south side of the building. That's where the most damage was done. That's where the roof collapsed and where the sixth and fifth floors collapsed. Until this building is deemed safe, no one is going to go inside, and that includes the tenants. Some of them came out today hoping to get inside to see what's left of their businesses, but they were turned away.
I got a license that's going to travel and, you know, have me doing whatever. You know, I can work anywhere, it's no problem. But it's just the fact that, you know, it's gone.
Other than 7 structural engineers. The only people who were inside that building today was a small group of firefighters. They went inside to do a partial search for more potential victims, but that search was limited to the north side of the building. The side of the building you see here is the south side of the building. This is where most damage was done. Firefighters weren't allowed to get anywhere near the south side of the building once they went inside. So they have only searched about half of this building for any potential victims. And again, arson investigators haven't even begun to go inside yet. Reporting live, Jeff Elin, 13 Eyewitness News.
Well, we do know that at least 3 people remain hospitalized from the fire at Memorial Hermann Hospital. A civilian is listed in critical condition, and 2 firefighters are in fair condition. No more information is being released about the firefighters' injuries. That's at the request of their families. The civilian suffered severe smoke inhalation and minor burns.
He came in talking when he was breathing well. The decision to go ahead and put him on a ventilator was made due to expanding airway edema that would be expected from smoke inhalation, and just hypoxia from the smoke into the lungs themselves compromises the ability to absorb oxygen.
Doctors do expect him to recover. Well, firefighters worked for hours yesterday helping those people trapped inside that building, and even had to help other firefighters, one captain having to be lowered to safety on a ladder. Eyewitness News reporter Kevin Quinn brings us a first-hand account of some of those chilling, life-saving moments. Kevin?
Melanie, it was a close call for Houston Fire Captain Eric Apt. Authorities say he was trying to drag a victim to safety when he became trapped. Just 50 minutes into the firefight, Station 8 Captain Eric Apt first signaled trouble. While searching for survivors, he became separated from his crew. Apt was on the 5th floor and running out of air. As his oxygen ran out, you could hear his breathing becoming more and more labored. Fire command staff on the ground at first didn't know who the firefighter was or where he was trapped. Concern grew with each passing minute, with each inhale and exhale. To stay calm, to control his breathing. He was able to only say a few words. Two rescue teams were sent inside this building to find Apt, but they weren't sure where to look. Then a break. After his first distress transmission, Apt was able to give rescue crews enough information to find him. The relief was palpable. Nearly 25 minutes after he first got into trouble, Captain Apt was on a ladder and headed to the hospital.
Authorities say Apt was near death when brought out of that building, but he has since improved dramatically. He is listed in fair condition at Memorial Hermann Hospital. 2 other firefighters were treated at that hospital. Captain Brad Langford is also listed in fair condition. He fell off a fire engine after trying to rescue survivors, and another firefighter was treated at the hospital and released. Kevin Quinn, 13 Eyewitness News.
We have learned the names of all 3 people killed in that fire. They are Shanna Ellis, Janetta Hargrove, and Marvin Wells. All 3 died on the 5th floor. Wells' family members tell us they are struggling to understand the reality that he never made it out of that fire. Marvin Wells, had an office on the 6th floor. His family says he just moved his trucking company there about 3 weeks ago. He was also a man of faith, pastoring for several years at a church on Houston's south side. His wife of 21 years said she didn't want to give up hope last night, even though she knew something was wrong.
I'm lost for words. I don't know what to say. It's just unbelievable. My husband was my heart. He loved me. He loved his children. He was my heart. He loved everyone. He helped others. The homeless, anybody who needed a helping hand, he helped.
He was just getting me ready, you know what I'm saying, because I'm 18 now, I'm a man now, so he was just getting me ready to take care of my family, the business, you know, it's my responsibility now.
Wells is survived by his wife, Linnell, and three children ranging in age from 11 to 20 years old.
Wells' relatives believe he may have died while trying to help the two other victims get out of that burning building. Eyewitness News reporter Laura Whitley spoke with Jeanette Hargrove's family, and she's in our newsroom now. Laura?
Melanie, days ago, Jeanette Hargrove's husband says he and his wife discussed the differences in their office buildings. The building where he works has fire drills and an evacuation plan. She said hers did not. At the time, they didn't consider it a big deal. Today, it's a tragic irony of his devastating loss. A smoky, flame-filled building, the frightening scene Willie Hargrove found when he arrived to pick up his wife from work Wednesday.
I parked somewhere and told an officer my wife is in that building, and since then, I've just been searching since then.
Hargrove's search for his beloved wife of 14 years was in vain.
Tried her cell phone, her work cell phone, her personal cell phone.
While her family frantically tried to reach her, Jeanette Hargrove was trapped inside the burning building. The medical examiner confirmed her death hours later, a devastating loss.
It's very profound, and I won't find a woman like her.
But. Along with her husband, Hargrove leaves behind her daughter, Portia.
I'm 16. I'll never have my mom again.
Even through excruciating grief, Portia finds strength to talk about how she admired her mother.
She was a giving, loving person.
Hargrove devoted her life to helping people. She worked with teenagers with disabilities. In recent years, she devoted much of her time to fighting for justice for a family member who was assaulted. She became well known by some victims' advocates.
Jeanette Hargrove was a true champion of children's rights and ensuring that children aren't going to be needlessly victimized.
A champion for others who continues to inspire those who loved her, even in death.
See, we want us just to go on and live a Christian life and just be strong for each other.